so many buttons, so many little clicks, so many things have to go right to make everything work here. Yes, for a moment, we were not streaming at whiterosesociety.org because I hadn't changed the input on the interface, on one of the two interfaces, on the sound card, in on the flea, on the branch, on the hole in the bottom of the sea. But now we are. We are streaming live via both the White Rose Society streams and the HeadOn.live stream. And that means that the program is going out to, goodness gracious, well, HeadOn.live and White Rose Society and Roku and Stitcher and TuneIn and FYI Nation. And, well, like I said, it's hard not to find us. It's just a matter of knowing that you need to. And, you know, some of that's a matter of community building. Tell your friends and neighbors. And have them tell their friends and neighbors. And that's how we grow the program. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is the 29th day of March, 2018. Being as how it's the 29th, we have no subscribers to thank this evening that I'm aware of. I checked. No, there aren't any. And we are in the fourth of 5 days of fundraising free radio thanks to our subscribers. You know, it's our subscribers who make it all possible for me to just do the program for about 5 days, 5 days a month without having to get in there and talk about the need to raise money and all of that. No, because our subscribers take care of about a quarter of the fundraising every month. And I'm not going to, it's broad daylight outside. This program is no different from any other this week. There won't be any fundraising during the program. I will mention this. If you participate in the Patreon campaign, one, your subscriptions don't come out until the first of the month. And two, you don't have to worry about being bothered with PayPal or anything. And just by way of encouragement, you know, if we got 20 more $10 a month subscribers at Patreon, that would be one more day. That would be 6 days a week or 6 days a month of fundraising free radio. And just looking at the download numbers, for instance. Looking at the download numbers for Podbean, which is one of the ways that we get the podcast out. You know, if everybody who listens via Podbean subscribed at $10 a month, we would be a long way toward no fundraising at all on the program. So there are some Podbean listeners who do subscribe, but remember, we're talking about 50 cents, less than 50 cents a program if you subscribe at $10 a month. And if you enjoy the program, and if you're able, it would be great to have those subscribers so that we can go on and do bigger and better and more grandiose things as 2018 continues apace. But anyway, That's where we find ourselves this evening. And that was not fundraising. That was just talking about something, you know, for April 1st, which is not an April Fool's thing. Program note, remember, all the programs next week, with the exception of Friday, next week, will be two-hour programs. I'll be filling in for Malloy Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and consequently, the program will be 2 hours long because I have to shut down at about 8 o'clock and retool and that, remember, with the buttons and the clicks and the check marks and make sure that I've got all of those going right in order to get the program up to Progressive Voices. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday are 2 hour programs from 6 to 8, and then 2 hours of Malloy from 9 to 11, and then we'll have ourselves a regular, a regular Friday on the Front Porch on Friday, the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th day of of April. Okay, so there, that's there. Then, further program note, I'll be gone the week following. I have to go to Washington, D.C. We've got a project we're working on with regard to the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign, and hopefully it will result in a new way of looking at the health emergency in the Appalachian, Central Appalachian Sacrifice Zone. And the plan is right now that I'll be gone Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and back Friday for a Friday on the front porch, assuming that things don't, that things like me blowing a tire on the rental car or being inordinately delayed in some godforsaken traffic jam on I-66 or something like that doesn't happen. So that's the plan to for the coming 2 weeks. As they please make a note of it. Okay? Okay. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we've got a veritable bouquet of thorns, and in many cases, instances in which I think one might fairly say that the bloom is off the rose and it ain't nothing but thorns. But before we go into that, I want to mention that, yes, spring appears to have at least temporarily sprung here in the hills and hollers of almost level west by cold Trump Virginia stand. In fact, here in the studio, we've managed to, mark this date on the calendar. We went to air conditioning on the 29th day of March, 2018. I don't know if we'll be turning that back off, but it was a necessity because when I came back here a few hours ago, it was a toasty 87 degrees. This the studio here at the fabulous Horn Studios here at the fabulous Kincaid Mansion. They're south facing, which is great for passive solar. Although the passive solar doesn't work so well in winter for some reason or another, because it seems like only a month ago, because it was that I was freezing my little tukas off. Okay, so it's not so little. But if you notice a roar in the background, that's because the limiter and the compressor and everything are turned off because I got tired of getting all the emails about, oh, Bob, you're too loud. Bob, you're too soft. So it's just a naked microphone. But if you hear a roar in the background, I apologize. That's the air conditioner. And we've managed to take it down to 79.2 degrees, up about a foot and a half from the ceiling, which means it's probably more like 77 down here where I am. Yes, a very happy Major League Baseball opening day to you, Marty. Thank you for remembering. And now the 162 game ritual renews itself once more. But even briefly, because we could, I'm sure, still have a blizzard or two left in us here in Appalachia. You know, it's just how things are here. I was out and about today, and I saw that the jonquils, I mean, I don't think they're native to Appalachia. I never really looked. But they're very popular here because they come up and they even survive in the last freezes and everything, and there are entire hillsides. Because I guess they self-propagate through the root structure or something. There are entire hillsides that are just alight in that beautiful, beautiful lemony yellow of jonquils blooming in the early spring. It's just gorgeous. We've got a few here along the property line that my mother and grandmother planted probably, 60, 65 years ago. And maybe this year I'll remember to, after they've died down and everything, maybe I'll remember to dig them up and spread them out a little bit, and they'll go a little bit wilder. Not wild, but they'll be a little bit more profuse in coming years. But it was a beautiful day, just an absolutely beautiful day here, and a reminder that soon, that magnificent perfume of two-cycle engine oil fuel will be wafting around me, and I'll be able to be outside and swinging. Things have to dry out. It's a mite squishy yet here, but I'll be able to be outside and swinging the weed eater in mad joy at the coming of warm weather. But all that being the case, you know, this time of year, we hillbillies like to start thinking about our greens, and that's why, courtesy of the we've also had recently had spring break, and consequently the hardworking peripatetic periodontic scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals, Horn Labs on Twitter, well, they got spring break, and that's why we haven't had any new products for a few days, because they've been away, and they're back from Myrtle now. Because that's where we hillbillies go. We all go to Myrtle. The sand isn't nearly as pretty as it is down at the Gulf Coast, but doggone it, it's just a lot closer. You know, 6-7 hours, and bang, you're on the beach, and you're a happy little hillbilly. But they're back now, and just like every other hillbilly, the hardworking peripatetic periodontic scientists of Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter are thinking about a big bowl of greens. Yeah, it'll be a little bit yet before the leaf lettuce is up and we can cut an onion into it and fry up some hog jowl and pour that just blistering hot grease all over it and a little salt and a little pepper and be happy, happy, happy. So until then, we make do with our spring tonic greens. And that's why I wanted to tell you today, friends and neighbors, about Crumhorn Creasy. Yes, Crumhorn Creasy, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, gives you that good springtime green tonic without having to go to all the trouble of going out and foraging for them, because the hardworking peripatetic periodontic scientists of Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter do the foraging for you with a proprietary blend of dehydrated and freeze-dried Creasy greens, which are then formed into capsules in the shape of medieval wind instruments. That's right, Crumhorn Creasy Greens in capsule form, a nutritional supplement unlike any other to accompany what comes along next week, a sporting event unlike any other. And take it now and enjoy it at your leisure. Crumhorn Creasy from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. And remember, like all Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter products, Crumhorn Creasy is proprietary and cruelty-free and free-range and vegan and sugar-free and soy-free and gluten-free. In fact, it's free of any nutritional value whatsoever. But I want to tell you this evening about a special new feature with our Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter products. That's right, I'm talking about the convenient ergonomic grip of all Horn Nutraceutical at Horn Labs on Twitter products. Yes, every Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter product will now come with a clean ergonomic grip so that you can get a clean, close dose of Horn Nutraceuticals bullshit nutritional supplements each and every morning. You know, every day now, I get up, and thanks to this innovation with Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, thanks to the clean ergonomic grip, I no longer have to worry about the capsules falling out of my grubby little mitts when I dump them out into them in the morning. And remember, Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter are the only bullshit nutritional supplements that have a clean ergonomic grip for a close, close dose of bullshit nutritional supplements. No salesman will call. Your mileage may vary. Use no hooks, post no bills. This side up, FOBCODGREEN. Yes. Crumhorn Creasy Greens. Only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, now with the clean ergonomic grip. accept no substitutes. Operators are not standing by. This is not a free call. And yes, yes, just as always, if you order a 90-day supply of Crumhorn Creasy Greens, well, golly gee, we'll send them to you. No, we won't. We'll just take your money. No, we won't even do that, because if you're fool, you're not silly enough to know. Of course not. But anyway, if you order the 90-day supply for only, I tell you, only $119 and call it 29 cents, plus, of course, $73.15 shipping and handling, we'll send you that 90-day supply of Crumhorn Creasy Greens with the clean ergonomic grip. And alongside, we'll send you a little bundle of confirmation strips, which also now come with a clean ergonomic grip. Yes. And that way you can find out that there's absolutely no nutritional benefit whatsoever to any Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs nutritional supplements. Because after all, they're nutritional supplements being hustled on the radio. What do you expect? They're going to work? Right. Crumhorn Creasy Greens, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Mm-hmm. So don't be waiting around. Get busy, because, well, supplies are unlimited. Just wanted to make sure that we got that out there, because, you know, I've never cared much for Creasy Greens, but thanks to Crumhorn Creasy Greens from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, especially now with the clean ergonomic grip, well, by golly, I can get all the creasy I could possibly ever want or need. Yes. So, there you have it. Stand not upon the order of your ordering, but order at once. Yes. So, like I said, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and there are always questions about the Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Steve in New York wants to know, but is it reality-free? Because I really don't like reality, and I'm developing an allergy to reality. There is absolutely no reality whatsoever in any product from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, Steve. And I'm glad you asked, because I want everybody to understand that. Even now that it has a clean ergonomic grip. Okie dokie. Where to start? Okay. You remember a couple of nights ago, we were talking, or and I said something along the lines of, one of these days, the left is going to wake up and find itself with a real hangover and sort of roll over in bed and realize who they've gotten in bed with, just because of the idea that the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and anybody who opposes Trump is a pal of mine, right? Yeah, and that's the moment where the left is going to go, why didn't I chew my arm off when I had the chance? Now we have to be friends. Well, there's an excellent example of that out there. I saw it on Twitter last week, and I went back and did some reading, and whoa. Generally speaking, one of the most venerable American publications is The Atlantic. I mean, it goes back to, I mean, for God's sakes, it goes back to, like, the Boston Brahmins and, you know, the 19th century, and it's a periodical that featured some of the leading lights of American thought of American intellect. And they've always prided themselves along those lines. But because of the bizarre and unique circumstances in which we find ourselves, all of a sudden, publications that should know better have been engaging in some wingnut affirmative action and bringing on board some really nasty people in the way of we got to stop this raw dog business. This thing has got to be nipped in the bud. God. No, Todd, just no. No. I mean, I'm getting emails now addressed to Raw Dog and text messages and things like that. This is quickly getting out of hand. I'm trying to do a serious story here, you people. You people, get off my lawn. But a year or so ago, as the Wall Street Journal, of course, you know, owned by the Murdoch organization, verged over into the wilds of Trump mania. One of their editorial page types grabbed a lifeline flung from the New York Times, and lo and behold, there he is, Brett Stevens, on the op-ed page, participating in a windfall of wingnut welfare, taking his climate change denying, campus rape denying opinions to the pages of the most venerated newspaper, quite possibly on Earth. Well, now we have another one. And, wow, just ick. The editor at The Atlantic is a guy named Jeffrey Goldberg. And he just hired, well, the only way to describe it is he hired a troll. He hired a troll who was proud of how trolly he was. Over at The Atlantic, they just hired a guy by the name of Kevin Williamson. Except for the fact that it hasn't turned white yet. He's got this long sort of Karl Marx kind of beard going on. And he's got a shaven head. You know, I'm not criticizing any of that. You know, I've got a little facial hair myself. But it's not his appearance that's disturbing. It's what goes on in the thin gray settlings between his ears that pass for brains. Kevin Williamson is a troll and a bigot. And Jeffrey Goldberg at The Atlantic has now hired him. One wonders what was going through Jeffrey Goldberg's head when he did it. But did it, he did. And added Kevin Williamson to The Atlantic's, and this is really kind of the punchline, added Kevin Williamson to The Atlantic's new ideas section. Now, Kevin Williamson is a guy who espouses and advocates positions that in many cases have not been in the mainstream of American thought since the middle of the 19th century, But somehow or another, Jeffrey Goldberg thinks that that constitutes a new idea. When the news broke that Kevin Williamson had been hired at the Atlantic, there was a bit of a firestorm with a lot of people saying, what in the actual, do you think you're, oh my God. And so Jeffrey Goldberg, the editor there, put out a, he put out a staff memo that was redacted somewhat and then released to the public that talked about how he believes in giving people second chances. And the opportunity to change. Yeah, no, really. If you don't know who Kevin Williamson is, then you probably missed a couple of programs here because I've deconstructed him a couple of times. He is an insufferable, and admits it, an insufferable snob. He grew up dirt poor in Texas and has no affinity whatsoever for the poor at all now that he is not among them any longer. And he comes to the Atlantic from where? Yes, the National Review, which remains a bastion of white supremacy in the American body politic. Again, no new ideas there. But to give you an idea of the quality of writing that we're discussing here, back in 2014, he wrote about a trip to East St. Louis, Illinois. Okay? And East St. Louis, Illinois is right across the Mississippi River from St. Louis, Missouri. And it is a hard and economically distressed place. There in East St. Louis, Kevin Williamson saw a little African-American child and referred to the child as a primate. And went on to refer to said child as 3/5, note the fraction there, because that little fraction made its way into the conversation previously this week, referred to the child as being 3/5 Snoop Dogg. Again, this guy has been hired for the new ideas section, lineup, whatever, of the Atlantic. The Atlantic. Yes. Founded by Northeast abolitionists all those years ago. And they just brought a guy into the new ideas section who refers to a little black child as a primate and 3/5 Snoop Dogg. You know, just like the Constitution refers to African Americans as 3/5 of a human being. Let's see, of trans people, Kevin Williams has written, regardless of the question of whether he has had his genitals amputated, and this is speaking of Laverne Cox from Orange is the New Black, Cox is not a woman, but an effigy of a woman. Really? I'm guessing if you're trans and you've got a subscription to the Atlantic, you'll be canceling. And other writers there, notwithstanding, if you're African American, you'd probably be canceling. And just letting it go on by. Because what's next? Putting Robert E. Lee on the fucking masthead? Along the way, he has also argued that any woman who has had an abortion should be hanged. New ideas, remember? We're talking here about the new ideas section of the Atlantic. Yes, women who have had abortions should be hanged. Yeah. And by the way, just to sort of take a little off ramp here and detour over for a couple of minutes on the two-lane highway before we get back on the information superhighway. That three-fifths business. Now, it would be ceremonial, what I'm about to propose here. And some would say that it is superfluous. In fact, I remember when the teabaggers took over the Congress back in 2010, and they came into office in 2011, and they had all these highfalutin ideals about how they were going to make everything different, and boy, it was, they were going to be transparent, and everybody, all the members were going to get a chance to read every bill. That didn't last. One of the things that they did was they put on a constitution reading. And they member after member came up and read a little bit of the Constitution into the record, and then the next person came up. But when it came to the three-fifths clause, they didn't read that part. Even though it remains in the Constitution of the United States to this day. Why does it remain in the Constitution of the United States to this day? Because the Constitution has never been amended to remove the language. Now, somebody might write in and say, but Bob, the three-fifths clause was rendered meaningless and moot by the abolition of slavery. True. Absolutely true. And I'm not trying to work with a straw man here, okay? It's moot. It's meaningless. But the fact remains that it remains in the body of the document. Because it has never been formally removed. It's sort of like, state constitutional provisions. There was a big stink in, what was it, Alabama, a few years ago, when the Republicans couldn't quite bring themselves to get rid of, I'm struggling here, what was it? I think it was anti-miscegenation. These boys is miscegenated. I don't see why we got to do that. It ain't the law no more. It's already unconstitutional. But, you know, it's one of those things that white folks probably don't have a really valid argument for or against. It's one of those things that the people affected by it, affected citizens, should be listened to most closely on. But nonetheless, even though I am white to the point of pink and can easily be burned under the refrigerator light bulb, I will go ahead and say that even though it would take up a little bit of legislative time and require a little bit of effort, that here in the waning years of the second decade of the 21st century, well on 231 years after the ratification of the Constitution with the three-fifths clause in it, it would probably have reconciliatory value to actually amend the Constitution and remove that language. Just get rid of it. Make it go away so that all future copies of the Constitution don't even have it in it. And there's really not a compelling argument for not doing that. The cost is, there might be some cost, but if you sit there and you amortize or whatever it is you do to a number and time and what it, to figure out the value of the time it would take for the national legislative body to take this up and do it, but it certainly couldn't begin to approach the cost of some of the other idiocy that this particular Republican Congress is engaged in. How much did it cost, just in terms of legislative time, for them to, for instance, make sure that a rule that was designed to keep hillbillies from being poisoned could be struck down and the poisoning of hillbillies could be re-legalized in Appalachia? I watched that happen last year. And so maybe if we actually got rid of the three-fifths clause, people like Kevin Williamson would stop referring to, say, little African-American children as three-fifths Snoop Dogg. Maybe. And then, just having listed a few of those other things, then there's the one that I'm most particularly well acquainted with, and the one that I spent considerable time taking apart on this program some years back. And that's the piece that he wrote for the National Racism Review in regard to Appalachia. It was based upon a trip he took into eastern Kentucky, and it stirred up quite a bit of thought and interest on the program at the time. But he went into Appalachia and found some white folks on welfare, because let's remember the vast majority of welfare in this country goes to white folks. But he and he alleged that they were that these hillbillies were running illicit black market Pepsi operations. Oh, I'm not kidding. There's this passage in the piece about the woman who takes all of her SNAP benefits and goes down and spends it all on Pepsi down to the Wally World. And then I presume she just sells the Pepsi so as to get cash and lives some sort of high, dissolute life. And he then went on to say that little communities where these poor, dead-broke hillbillies lived, that those communities just, and these are his words, not mine, deserve to die. Funny thing about a community, communities are made up of people. And so when you say a community should die, you're making an argument that so too should the people. And, well, I guess we shouldn't be surprised that an idea like that of, you know, little localized genocide would arise in the pages of the National Review. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I got a note here from Steve in New York, saying, Bob, I understand your statement and perspective of the Atlantic. However, as you know, there are any number of publications that have jerks writing for them, as below. I don't think that's a reason to cancel a publication. It seems to me that the sentiment you're expressing is akin to people forsaking the Democratic Party as the Purity Brigade did. Let me be clear, I'm not trying to equate you with the Purity Brigade, but this strikes me as at least in that ballpark. It strikes me that keeping a subscription and exposing these nutballs as the bigots and racists they are. New York Times, Judith Miller, formerly Ross Douthat, David Brooks, David Frum, and yes, as I mentioned at the beginning, Brett Stevens. I didn't say anybody should cancel subscriptions. I suggested that maybe people would. which is not a good thing for something that claims to be one of the leading intellectual publications of the United States. The problem is, Jeffrey Goldberg at The Atlantic makes clear that he knew exactly what he was getting with Kevin Williamson. And in his memo, Goldberg says, "The larger question is this. What am I trying to accomplish by having Kevin write for us? The first answer is this. He's an excellent reporter who covers parts of the country and aspects of American life that we don't yet cover comprehensively. I happen to think that conservative..." Yeah, any time some highbrow says "happen to think," you know, consider yourself slapped with a kidskin glove. "I happen to think that conservatives made ideologically homeless by the rise of Trump are some of the most interesting people in America, and I want to read them whenever I can. He's such an interesting monster. I was just telling my girlfriend the other day, if an interesting monster can't have an interesting hairdo, I don't know what the world's coming to. Bobby pins, please. Oh, that's never going to hold. You're going to need a permanent..." Well, Kevin Williams is an interesting monster. But that is a line of utter unmitigated bullshit, is what that is, about what an excellent reporter he is. It doesn't take a hell of a lot of talent to go into Eastern Kentucky and sneer down your nose at poor people and say that they ought to fucking die. That's not talent. That's evil. And to say that Kevin Williamson was the natural first choice for telling us about the all those little hole in the wall places in Middle America, in the heartland of the homeland, where all that economic anxiety resides, is just 200 proof horseshit. But Jeffrey Goldberg says he wants to read them whenever he can. And then, adding insult to injury, he goes on to describe Kevin Williamson as, wait for it, a diversity hire. No, really, wingnut affirmative action. "Well, the poor little fella didn't have anywhere to go, so we wanted to give him a leg up over one of those uppity women people." You know, you want somebody to report on the heartland of the homeland and all that economic anxiety and shit? Hire somebody who lives there. And I'm not talking about me. Hire somebody who interacts on a daily basis. And I'm not talking about me. I'm not angling for an Atlantic gig. I don't think I could swill enough Chablis and gobble enough Brie to qualify for a job there. You want to talk about work? You want somebody who can write about working people? Why don't you hire somebody who's been working people? Over on Twitter, there's a woman by the name of Linda Tirado, T-I-R-A-D-O, and she writes brilliantly. She would have been a quality hire. But no. Kevin Williamson has to be maintained in the comfort to which he has become accustomed. And so he gets a nice gig at The Atlantic so that he can write the Appalachian genocide stories. God, I'd love to. I wouldn't love it. But can you imagine what he'd write about people in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone? No, really. Can you imagine flying him out to Sacramento so he could refer to the most recent case of death by cop and refer to the victim perhaps as a primate and 3/5 of Snoop Dogg? Boy, I tell you, that is some highfalutin thought leadership in the pages of the Atlantic, isn't it? Here's the thing, though. Assuming that the planet survives, or that life on the planet survives, the planet's going to survive. It might be a charcoal husk, just sort of wobbling through the universe by the time Trump's done. But planet, no, it's life on Earth that we're worried about. There's going to come a time when all these never-Trumpers who were given a home as though they were some sort of shelter puppy that was about to get the shot. No, if the Atlantic hadn't hired Kevin Williamson, he would have just had to go somewhere else more suited to his ideological leanings and spew his hate from there. But there's that morning's going to come, like I said, when we on the left side of the spectrum, from center left all the way out to oh my God. all the way out to the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade, we're going to wake up. We're going to be and we're probably going to be awakened by snoring. And we're going to notice that we don't have any feeling in our arm. And we're going to roll toward the arm and we're going to see Kevin Williamson there. Or Brett Stevens, you know, with the snot just sort of leaking into their bushy mustaches, and our first inclination is going to be to scream, but then we're going to realize that if we scream, we might wake him up. And he'll start writing about what a thankless bunch of miserable goddamn trolls we all are, and calling forth the Klan or the Nazis or something to teach us a little lesson, or maybe tell us that we and our communities need to die. And that will probably occasion a little bit of pondering, you know, in the way of, wait a minute, how did I wind up waking up with Kevin Williamson cutting off the blood supply to my arm? And then we'll remember. We were in a bar. And we were talking about how much of a human disaster Donald Trump is as president of the United States. And then we'll remember that there was this guy. And granted, we were drinking in a bar and everything, and we were pretty well into the bag by then. You know, we were if we weren't speaking in it yet, we were certainly thinking in Reformed Egyptian by then. We were the kind of drunk that happens when you don't, as the saying goes, stay with the woman what brung you, and you start out drinking. You start out with a beer, and then you move over and you have a shot of vodka, and then hey, bring us all 3 shots of Jägermeister each, and you pound that down. And then, you know what I'd like to have? Singapore Sling. Bring me a Singapore Sling. And after that, maybe a nice, sweet, ishy pina colada, and finish it all off with some cheap champagne, and try not to, and try not to heave all over the back seat of the Uber on the way home. And there's this guy with us, and he's got this, he's like a skinhead, and he's got this long ass creepy soup strainer beard, and there he is, and he doesn't have any clothes on, and we're laying next to him, and we can't feel our arm anymore. Because he said, I hate Trump too. And we said, you hate Trump? I hate Trump. Well, we hate Trump. We're friends. And you can't quite remember it particularly clearly, but there's something back there from the foggy recesses of that night where toward the end of it, he started talking about how we needed free market solutions to health care for veterans. Or that we needed to get the government regulations off the backs of the car manufacturers, or maybe that we needed to take everybody's Social Security money and dump it in the stock market and let some guy put the entire elderly well-being of the United States on a roulette wheel and say, red, no, black, no, red, oh, black, oh, God, oh, we lost it all, really? Really? Granny's not even going to be able to afford a can of little Friskies? Well, that's the free market for you. And he's laying there snoring, and we still can't feel our arm. And after a little while, he begins to... And you know, even at a distance, you can smell the right-wing birdcage breath. And he rolls over and looks at you and says, how about you get me a cup of coffee, sugar, now that we're friends? And that's when you ask yourself, what in the hell did I do? Yeah. And he kind of rolls over and you still don't have any feeling in your arm, and you gotta do that young Frankenstein thing where you grab the arm and you physically move it and you're trying to get some blood flow going in it, because now you have to go and make breakfast for your new friend, the racist, that you became friends with because he said he didn't like Trump. And we're going to have lots of those new friends. There's a veritable parade of them over on MSNBC, for instance. Because the most surefire way to get yourself in front of a camera these days is to say that you're a Republican who opposes Donald Trump. And then it's hail fellow well met. Even if you have a history of shrieking about how that Obamacare is going to destroy America and freedom. But that's okay, because that's a new idea, according to Jeffrey Goldberg over at the goddamned Atlantic. Note coming in from Michael and Madison. New ideas? New ideas, huh? Sort of like Roseanne on Kimmel, trying desperately to normalize her embrace of Trumpism, normalize her tweets calling Hillary a murderer, her perpetuation of Russian bot propaganda. Apparently her rebooted sitcom actually has some progressive aspects, as the original program did at its best moments. I only caught, out of morbid curiosity, the last 13 minutes of the first episode. What I saw was a gender-fluid child who was being bullied at school, treated by the show's writers and the fictional family with compassion and understanding. I also saw a cartoonish liberal caricature when one family member breathlessly declared that Becky's husband had decided to eat the placenta. What I apparently missed earlier in the episode was Roseanne rationalizing her character's Trump vote. You know, voting for the bully-in-chief. He who empowered and emboldened those who would abuse her fictional grandson. I don't know. Michael continues, I really don't want to get into a debate about a sitcom, but somehow this matter with The Atlantic brought it to mind. All this stale old racism and misogyny, this acceptance of gross incompetence, collusion and lies, it's not Trumpism, hey, it's just new ideas. No better, no worse than our leftist agenda, just more fresh. New ideas. Trademark. Have we reached peak normalization yet? In answer to that final question, Michael, I'll say no, probably not. That won't happen until the confirmation hearing for Dr. Ronnie Jackson. Admiral Ronnie Jackson, White House physician, to lead the VA. The second largest bureaucracy in the entire federal government, for which he has not one iota of training or ability. We'll reach peak normalization when people like heroic Parthian-shot, rubber-tipped archer Jeff Flake says, well, I often disagree with the president, but, you know, he's the president, and elections have consequences, and, well, I feel duty-bound to vote for whoever he nominates for whatever position, so I will vote to confirm Dr. Ronnie Jackson, the man who said that Donald Trump was 6'3" and 239 pounds. I'll vote for him. I'll vote to confirm him as head of the VA. And noted never-Trumper Bob Corker will say, me too, me too. And highfalutin, ideals-packing Republican moderate Susan Collins will say, I remember as well to vote for Ronnie Jackson. Jesus. So, that's my best guess. Michael. So, let's take a break. That'll mark the end of the first hour of the Filibobster. It's a Thursday, of course, so that means that we have the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen to look forward to in the next few minutes. And, of course, if you have any interest in engaging in conversation, you can ring up the program, 304-574-8178. Toll free if you need us to pay the freight, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And, of course, on Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Yes, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B. KincaidHorn. And that'll get you right in. Yeah, I'm just trying to think of what would make for a nice bumper for all of this. I had one just run through my head real quick, and then it just disappeared. in the midst of all of those new ideas. Yeah. Let's see, let's try this. Yeah, why not? I like that. I like that. All right, this is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
As I walk through this wicked world, searching for light in the darkness of insanity, I ask myself, is all hope lost? Is the only pain hatred and misery? And each time I feel like this inside, there's one thing I want to know. What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? Oh, what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? My spirit gets so downhearted sometimes. So where I'd strong and who I'd trusted, and where is the harmony, sweet harmony? 'Cause each time I feel it slip away, just makes me wanna cry. What's so funny about it? Love and understanding. Oh, what's so fun about peace, love and
It's Thursday, March 29, 2018.
1.8 trillion pieces of plastic weighing 80,000 tons.
Plastic pollution within the Great Pacific Garbage Patch is increasing exponentially. Cutting greenhouse gas emissions would save 150 million lives around the world. Americans have grown increasingly polarized in their views on global warming. Plus,
the people that put themselves in the way of building this fossil fuel pipeline were found not responsible by reason of necessity.
Pipeline protesters found not guilty in landmark new ruling.
All of those happy verdicts and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It was this past administration, Obama, that said that we had to choose. Choose jobs or growth at the expense of environment, or choose environment at the expense of jobs.
Well, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can fool the viewers of Fox and Friends all the time. Am I right, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, you say the American people are becoming more polarized than ever? I don't believe it.
Yes, they are becoming more polarized than ever in their views on global warming. That's according to the latest Gallup poll released this week. In a potential sign that the Trump administration's aggressive climate denial may be shifting the public debate, independents have grown more doubtful of scientists' warnings about climate change over the past year. 65% now know that the vast majority of scientists believe global warming is actually occurring, but that's down 8 points from just last year.
So it's still a majority of so-called independents, but just a smaller majority.
Yes. However, the poll does find that more Americans than ever before now believe scientists' warnings that global warming will pose a serious threat within their lifetimes. But that is still only 45% of Americans. Despite these changes, the long-term trend of public opinion, according to Gallup, is still shifting overwhelmingly toward the scientific consensus on global warming. Meanwhile, taking serious action on climate change now could mean saving hundreds of millions of lives around the world. That's according to a new study published in Nature Climate Change. Researchers at Duke University calculated the human health benefits of governments taking action to hold climate change to just 1.5 degrees Celsius over pre-industrial times, a more aggressive target than the current 2 degrees Celsius limit that nations agreed to in the United Nations Paris Accord. That study found that meeting the 1.5 degrees Celsius target would prevent more than 150 million premature deaths worldwide by 2030, mostly by decreasing air pollution caused by fossil fuels.
Well, don't tell the folks on Fox News. They really don't want to hear about saving 150 million lives.
A new survey estimates that the Pacific Garbage Patch, that massive toxic soup of tiny plastic pollution in the Pacific Ocean, somewhere between California and Hawaii, is actually much bigger than previously estimated, as much as 16 times bigger, covering an area three times the size of France. In a BBC interview, project manager Fiona Llewellyn of the Ocean Cleanup Foundation said that the soup is becoming more dense as more trash enters the ocean.
Once plastic enters the ocean, it can persist for, we think, thousands of years. It doesn't ever go away. It just breaks down into smaller and smaller particles, into microplastics. And as we've seen, these microplastics are able to enter the food chain.
The Ocean Cleanup Foundation next plans to test whether a large year-round collection screen in the ocean can succeed in cleaning up at least some of that plastic pollution. But there is some good news. The New Jersey state legislature has rejected the Trump administration's plan to open their Atlantic coastal waters to offshore drilling. This week, they passed unanimously a bill to ban all offshore oil and gas development in state waters and ban infrastructure that would support drilling in federal waters off the state's coast. New Jersey's Democratic Governor Phil Murphy is expected to sign it. Finally, in Massachusetts, for the first time, a judge has found 13 protesters not responsible by reason of necessity, that's the equivalent of not guilty in a criminal case, for their civil disobedience action temporarily blocking the construction of a pipeline in West Roxbury. The judge accepted their defense that they were justified because of the potential environmental and public health impacts of the pipeline and because of the urgent need to stop climate change. Here's Karenna Gore, daughter of former Vice President Al Gore and one of the defendants.
We're going to be demanding that the people who are in elected office and also the corporations who are putting their costs, the costs of their doing business for their own profits, they are putting that cost on the public. They're putting that cost on future generations. And we are taking responsibility to say no to that.
Good for Karenna Gore. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
So much winning. Believe me, fabulous winning. So much, yeah. It is 11 minutes past the hour on this 29th day of March 2018, this Thorn in the Side Thursday. I think we've got a nice start with some thorns. Lee in New York with a note about constitutional amendments in the Three-Fifths Clause. I don't know if the Constitution has ever been amended to remove text. Even the 21st Amendment did not remove the 18th Amendment. On the other side of the argument, maybe we need to remember our injustices. The easiest way to repeat the errors of our history is to forget them. Well, and keep it lit, signed Lee. Thank you, Lee. I can follow that argument, but once again, I think maybe if we were to run it past the people that language impacts, we might get a somewhat different answer. Because the Three-Fifths Clause in the original body of the Constitution remains, well, it's like a Confederate statue smack dab in the middle of our founding and enabling document. Uh-oh, Marty, don't issue threats. Marty says, speak ill of Carlos Santana and I'll never donate another dime again. there's nothing about Santana. No. Of course not. I love Santana. And I'm betting he doesn't like Trump. So, you know, we're probably on the same page. Sparky noting in the chat room in his manifestation being a third stage, or not third stage, but a spacing guild master, noting that today is, in his manifestation as Man Cave, noting that today is Hope Hicks's last day. She's really been gone for quite a while, and there are reports coming out of the bedlam that is the White House that the Tangerine Tiberius has been having a fit, that he's shrieking and carrying on and hollering for his Hopi, and his Hopi isn't there. No, really. For the past several weeks, staffers in the White House have reported that that geezer Disgustus has been, where's Hope? I need Hope. Get Hope for me. Sir, she doesn't work here anymore. She quit after you screamed at her, after she admitted to the Congress that she had lied for you, sir. Yeah, he's... And apparently... things are going to go, are predicted to be headed downhill in a hurry. Because apparently she was the Rosetta Stone of sanity among that bunch. I don't know. From time to time on the program, we catch up with stories that I've covered in the past, and I've got an update on one. You might recall, it was August of last year. You might recall a story in which a woman in Tennistan, right in downtown Nash Vegas, gut shot a homeless man. You know, because feed him. He was trying to catch a few winks on the sidewalk. And, of course, there's a whole another conversation to be had about the fact that we really don't give much of a damn about the homeless in this country, because there's no reason for any, not even one person in this country to be homeless. No viable reason except for neglect and disdain. But a homeless man in Nash Vegas, Tennessee, was trying to catch some sleep on the sidewalk when 27-year-old Katie Quackenbush, or as Chico Marx would pronounce it, Hackenabush. 27-year-old Katie Quackenbush she disturbed, in the early hours of August 26th, she disturbed the sleeping homeless man with the exhaust fumes and the loud music that she was blasting from her Porsche Cayenne SUV. And the homeless man, waking up, said, "Would you move that thing?" And 27-year-old Katie Hackenabush, who is an aspiring country music artist who bills herself as... Katie Lane. Well, in response to being asked to turn down the damn music in the wee morning hours of August 26, 2017, she pulled out her Freedom Protector and fired a warning shot right into the homeless man's innards. Well, we have an update on the case. Davidson County, Tennessee, the court system there, has indicted Katie Hackenabush on counts of attempted first-degree murder and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, because the homeless man managed not to die and thereby saved Katie Hackenabush from the death chamber. Not that she would have gotten it, because, well, Katie Hackenabush isn't the kind of person, if you know what I mean, that you give the death penalty to in a place like Tennessee. Meanwhile, her father, Jesse Hackenabush, said that shooting the guy in the guts, shooting an unarmed homeless man in the guts, was an act of self-defense. Oh, I wish I was kidding. He said, and he's from Texas, "She did give a warning shot, not knowing that it hit him, and she's being painted as this merciless person that would just leave someone dying in the street when it's just not the case." And I reckon Pappy Hackenabush has a point here, because he didn't die in the street. Somebody got him to the hospital where he didn't die. So she didn't just leave him dying in the street. She just fired a warning shot into his guts, that's all. She has not yet entered a plea to the indictment as handed down by the grand jury there in Davidson County. Just, like I said, just kind of an update. Oh, but while we're going over such things as this, let's check in down in the aforementioned Texas. I believe it was last week, or maybe the week before. It all kind of runs together after a while. It was last week or so when I shared the story of the... Mama in Mobile, Alabama, who just left her Freedom Protector laying around so that one of her little youngins went and blew away another of her little youngins, you know, because you want to leave your freedom protector out and lying within easy reach with a round chambered and ready to go, because you never know when the Black Lives Matter ISIS Al-Qaeda is going to come busting through your doorway, and you're going to have to stand there and defend freedom. Wolverines! Yeah, that. Well, coming out of Texas, a 7-month-old has hopefully not died since the story was published, after being shot by its 4-year-old sibling in Temple, Texas. Happened about 2:30 in the afternoon in Temple, Texas. The baby was, in fact, conscious and breathing when it was taken to McLean Children's Hospital. At the time of the reporting, it wasn't certain whether the 7-month-old was a boy or a girl. What the 7-month-old was, in fact, shot in the name of freedom. Maybe we can pin one of those little Tree of Liberty medals next to its little tiny pillow there in the crib as it recovers. The woman believed to be the mama of the two youngins called 911. The woman was the only adult inside the house at the time. At the time of the filing of the report, nobody knew exactly what kind of weapon it was or how the 4-year-old got a hold of it. Now, I am by no means Sherlock Holmes, but I feel pretty safe in offering up a hypothesis here, using that Holmesian concept that after once you have eliminated the impossible, whatever is left, however improbable, is likely the answer. It's probably a good bet that the firearm was left loaded in the home. That it was not left loaded in the home by, say, the amorphous multi-limbed creatures from Norblap 9. It was probably also not the doing of John Wilkes Booth or David Koresh or the recently dead Charles Manson. It was probably not left there, despite all the conspiracy theories being created and promulgated all over the internet, by one of the Parkland kids. No, I would use the powers of deductive reasoning and logic to suggest that the pistol was left there by someone who had either visited or lived in the house, and being Texas, was worried about all the ISIS fighters that one of these days are going to come barreling across the Rio Grande and take away all the freedom of all the Texans. I can make these deductions because there are a couple of signs, and I have a photograph of them here. There are a couple of signs in front of the house, one of which says, "Warning, security cameras in use." But the other sign reads, "The average response time of a 911 call is 23 minutes. The response time of a 357 is 1,400 feet per second." Bradley Martin lives in Temple, Texas, and said that he saw the baby as it was being taken away. It just looked lifeless in his hands. There was blood all over the baby. They put the baby in the back of an ambulance and took off down the road. But fortunately, Adrian Martinez, a neighbor there in that area, said, Well, I'm not there to judge them. But in my family, it happened once with my cousin. My cousin killed accidentally my other cousin. It happens. Accidents happen. Amy Fontenot took a different tack when interviewed. Amy said, "Well, I hope the baby's okay, and I hope the family's going to be all right. And if they're going to have guns, take precautions, obviously." Yes, you want to take precautions. You want to have protection if you got a gun. Maybe put a condom on it or something. This is horrifying. The response time of a 357 is 1,400 feet per second. Uh-huh. I hope the baby survived. I sincerely hope the baby survived. Jesus. Meanwhile, note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. He said, "Speaking of the Parkland kids, do you know where I can find some crisis actors?" Ms. Hackenbush was just standing her ground. Right. Because you never know when one of those sleeping homeless people is just going to get up and the next thing you know, you're going to be all fresh out of feedum. Yeah. Damn. No, there's no end. You know, there's no end of these stories. By the way, another follow up. Yeah, you remember the other day we talked about the Me Too movement finding its way to Mother Russia? Oh wait, back up to this. There we go. Steve, it happens in gun speak. The gun just went off. Yeah. Or the youngin' just pulled the trigger. Right. And that's another one of those stories that we will never know the rest of, because we're never going to know what impact it had on the family. We're never going to know how they struggled or didn't to pay the medical bills that stemmed from that moment, just one of many moments that we have to have here in the new 90 states of America, the greatest country in the history of the world, on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, under God. Just one of many moments that we are required to have so that people like Coolion Noir and Dana Lush and Wayne the Peter can live comfortable, wildly paranoid, sick lives of reasonable comfort. But anyway... wait a minute. Hackenbush. What's this? Arthur? Hackenbush. Is that a hack in your bush, or are you happy to see me? No, just making yogurt? Porsche SUV? What the... Brother Bob, what's next? Rolling coal pickup truck by Lamborghini? Well, sadly, the Porsche Cayenne is one of... I think that's the highest-selling member of the Porsche family now. But, yeah, and they're made, I think, maybe in Leipzig? But, yeah, whatever, right. No, but remember how we talked about the Me Too movement finding its way to Mother Russia? Well, we've even got a follow-up on that. Because having his little toadies criticized is not something up with which dear, sweet, huggable, cuddly, lovable Vlad Pootypoot, who's definitely not ponerized, is willing to put. That's why he sent out his head spokescreep, Dmitry Peskov, to address the situation when one of his pet legislators got the sort of brought it to public attention for being one of those serial gropers and sexual abusers who grab women, well, you know, by the... Dmitry Peskov, by way of addressing the sexual abuse allegations against one of Pootie's pet legislators, felt the need to explain the, I'm not kidding, Harvey Weinstein problem, the Harvey Weinstein horror, the Harvey Weinstein nightmare, the Harvey Weinstein sexual molestation scandal, perhaps crimes, to journalists and students there in Mother Russia. Speaking of the women who made allegations of sexual abuse and sexual assault against Harvey Weinstein, Dmitry Peskov said, in public no less, of the actresses, "They earn hundreds of millions of dollars, and 10 years later, they say that Weinstein is to blame. Maybe he is bastard, but none of them went to police. No, they wanted to earn $10 million. What do you call a woman who slept with a man for $10 million? She is called prostitute." Oh, really? The personal spokescreep, Dmitry Peskov, for cuddly, huggable, wouldn't ever sexually abuse anybody, definitely not ponerized, Vlad Pootie, declared that every woman who was sexually assaulted or sexually molested or sexually abused or sexually harassed by Harvey Weinstein is prostitute. Then again, if we are to believe what we are told, folks in Vlad's inner circle know a little bit about prostitutes. It was not lost on me that, of course, the Russian regime announced today that they were expelling 60 American diplomats and closing the U.S. consul in St. Petersburg. It was not lost on me that one of the things that keeps wandering around in the background of the whole Trump-Russia affair is the fact that there's not just one tape, but possibly two, maybe three. The one tape that we've heard about is the tape of Geezer Disgustus in a hotel room, the Ritz-Carlton in Moscow, the same room that Barack Obama and Michelle had stayed in, enjoying a scene in which Russian prostitutes urinated on the bed where Barack Obama slept and getting great joy out of that. The other thing that if you dig around you'll find is that there are allusions to another tape of Trump actively having sex with underage girls And that's said to have been transpired in St. Petersburg. But as I noted, we would do well to recall the withdrawn under threat lawsuit filed by Katie Johnson, who said that when she was 13 years old, she was raped by Donald Trump at a soiree thrown by his buddy, convicted pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. And that Katie Johnson was selected for rape by Trump because at the age of 13, she reminded him of Ivanka, who was herself 13 years old that same year and bore some resemblance to Ivanka. But anyway, Dmitry Peskov, by way of defending, remember his name? Remember the guy Dmitry Peskov is defending? Yes, Leonid Slutsky. By way of defending the sexually predatory behavior of Leonid Slutsky, he referred to every woman in the Weinstein disaster horror as a prostitute. And it's the sort of typical deflection that one has come to expect over the years, whether it be the Soviet Union or the modern Russian Federation, from them. Speaking to the students, Dmitry Peskov said, "If Slutsky attacked poor journalist, where was she? Why did she put up with it? They got felt up in his office. Girls probably see better, but he can probably be seen as a not very pleasant man. If he felt you up, if he harassed you, why were you silent? Why did so much time pass? Then you go to Ethics Commission. This just amazed me." Meanwhile, the Parliamentary Ethics Commission ruled that Leonid Slutsky hadn't committed any wrongdoings. And that's when journalism outfits did something that journalism outfits here in the United States don't ever have the goddamn guts to do. They said, "Oh, you're going to whitewash this and pretend it didn't happen? Well, we're just going to stop covering you." "You call them prostitutes." "Yes." That's special. Yeah, by the way, out there in the world of all the interesting people that people around Trump have managed to meet, another. According to counterintelligence officers in Europe, George Papadopoulos, who has pled guilty in the Mueller probe, took meetings with the defense minister in Greece, whose name is Panos Kamenos. This happened both before and after the election in 2016. Why does this matter? Well, in addition to the meetings that we already know about between Papadopoulos and Joseph Mifsud, who was the one who told Papadopoulos that the Russians had thousands of Hillary Clinton emails. He also met with this Greek defense minister, Panos Kamenos. And Panos Kamenos, meanwhile, is once again a close associate of who? That's right, Putin. A NATO military intelligence officer said, like much of the Greek economic and security establishment, the Ministry of Defense is considered compromised by Russian intelligence. Specifically, we have been officially warned against briefing Greek ministry representatives about sensitive intelligence operations involving the Russians because of that compromised status. Yet Papadopoulos, meanwhile, is maintaining omerta and won't say what he and Kamenos discussed. Kamenos also made nice and had little set downs and tete-a-tetes and tea and crumpets or whatever with Rince Priebus and Steve Bannon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, when the Obama administration was supposed to sit down with them, Defense Secretary Ash Carter canceled a meeting with Kamenos once they found that Kamenos was compromised. There are even photos of Kamenos with Rince Priebus from January 19th and January 21st, 2017. Priebus, meanwhile, has declined to comment. It's interesting, though. Last night on the program, I could not find the name of the guy who is the latest name to be mentioned in conjunction with Trump's legal team in the Mueller investigation. Well, I found it since, and it gets even more interesting. Now, remember, that's the Greek defense minister that we were just talking about. And there is a long-standing connection between Greece and Russia that is formed through the bond of the Greek Orthodox Church and the Russian Orthodox Church. And historically speaking, the double eagle symbol of the Tsars and Russia, that's the same double eagle symbol that the Byzantine Empire used, because as the Byzantine Empire collapsed, Greek culture considered itself to be preserved and saved. Byzantine culture considered itself to have been somewhat preserved in Russia. I mean, the Cyrillic alphabet, for instance, comes from the fact that Greek Orthodox missionaries were the ones who went up there when the Slavic peoples were considered godless, illiterate barbarians, and that is why Russia is Orthodox and not Roman Catholic. And it was Greek missionaries who took the sounds of the Slavic languages and built them an entirely new alphabet based not upon the Roman alphabet, but upon the Greek one. That's why so many letters in Cyrillic hearken back to the Greek alphabet. And if you know a little bit of Greek, you can dope out the occasional sound or two in Russia, although it is significantly modified. Well, how interesting then, in a little bit of hindsight, that Jay Sekulow has announced that a man by the name of Andrew Ekonomou, E-K-O-N-O-M-O-U, whom and this was the guy we were talking about last night when I was talking with Scott and Punky. Andrew Ekonomou has been mentioned by Jay Sekulow as a brilliant strategist who will take on a more prominent role in the personal defense of Donald Trump in the Mueller investigation. Yeah, here's the thing. At present, he is a contract assistant district attorney in Brunswick, Georgia. Now, I'm sure Brunswick, Georgia has the same usual run-of-the-mill meat and potatoes criminal prosecution kind of business as any other small town, small county, anywhere pretty much in America. Because Brunswick is not exactly a metropolitan hotbed of high stakes political intrigue. It sits there. Don't get me wrong. Brunswick, Georgia, and the area generally around there is beautiful. There's low country there, the barrier islands. It's just exquisite. And good folks in Brunswick, Georgia. But Brunswick, Georgia is not Washington, D.C. Andrew Ekonomou became associated with Jay Sekulow, who is one of these TV, you'll recall, one of these TV lawyers. Well, they became associated through a nonprofit, and it's all tax-free, hallelujah, called the American Center for Law and Justice. Because Sekulow is the general counsel for that right-wing den of lawyers. What has Andrew Ekonomou done in that regard? Well, at one point in time, and this, lo and behold, there's a West Virginia connection, isn't there always? Sekulow tasked Ekonomou, I got no idea if I'm even getting that remotely right. He tasked him with writing a shitty letter to the son of a widow woman who got pissed off when Sekulow sent her dead husband one of those classic aggressive fundraising letters. I didn't know that. Devin letting me know that in Ukraine, the double eagle is known as Chernobyl chicken. Are you just making that up, Devin? Because if you're just making that up, that's a cowbell. If you're not, that's an interesting cultural footnote. So this menacing letter came from Sekulow, and Sekulow, meanwhile, you got to remember, he's a Christian conservative. And the American Center for Law and Justice, that hustle that he runs, that's a Pat Robertson joint. Mm-hmm. And so Alice Risler got his fundraising letter in Charlestown, West Virginia, which is over in the Eastern Panhandle and is most definitely not Charleston, West Virginia. And it was a complete fraud, the letter was. I know you received a call from my assistant, Damian Boyd. I know you told Damian that you weren't sure whether you could help with a gift or not, but if you do find you can send as much as $25, it'll be a tremendous blessing. Your brother, advocating Jesus, Jay. The letter had been addressed to John S. Risler, who was dead 2 years prior. 86-year-old Mrs. Risler, when she was interviewed back in 2003, said, "I was amazed. I couldn't understand what it was all about." So she handed the letter off to her son, Ron. So Ron calls the American Center for Law and Justice and says, "I want to talk to either Damian Boyd or Jay Sekulow." Someone named Derek said, "Well, there's no Damian Boyd here." And Ron Risler went on to say, I need an explanation of how this guy could have talked to my father who died 2 years ago. Interviewed by the Washington Post, Risler said, "The guy laughs at me, and I said, I don't find much humor in this, and neither does my mother." So later on, he writes a letter. Ron Risler does. He said, "I want to hear from you, Jay Sekulow, or this Boyd person," and signs it, "Your brother advocating Jesus, Ron." Well, that's where Andrew Economou, brilliant strategist, comes back into the picture. He writes a nasty gram to Ron Risler on the letterhead of Economou, Atkinson, and Lambros, LLC, and identifies himself as counsel for Jay Sekulow. And he says, "It is not clear to me why you have addressed your letter to Mr. Sekulow when it is Mr. Boyd with whom you wish to speak. Any further direct communications between you and my clients are to cease at once."
Advocating for Jesus!
No, that wasn't in there. Risler considered himself the recipient of a legal threat. Then he wrote to Economou and started asking him questions. And Ron Risler was no dummy and started asking hard questions like, I wonder if the American Center for Law and Justice is violating the West Virginia Solicitation of Charitable Funds Act and statutes that deal with fraudulent schemes and false pretenses. And then all of a sudden, all the starch went out of Andrew Economou, and he said, the letter to your dead daddy was an inadvertence. Boyd spoke with John Risler, your twin brother, who shares his late father's first name but has a different middle initial. Meanwhile, nothing of the sort had ever happened, and Economou was just lying through his goddamn teeth. Meanwhile, Damian Boyd, remember Damian Boyd, said he spoke to Mr. Rissler on behalf of Mr. Sekulow. Well, Damian Boyd was an employee for InfoCision. InfoCision was the telemarketing firm that the American Center for Law and Justice had hired. And a spokescreep, Gene Kapp, for the American Center for Law and Justice, said that the reference to Damian Boyd as the assistant to Jay Sekulow accurately describes the relationship, because Boyd, working for InfoCision, was assisting the ACLJ and Sekulow in fundraising. Yeah. Meanwhile, attempting to explain away the skeeve and the sleaze, Jay Sekulow says, "When you have a large organization and a database of hundreds of thousands of donors, unfortunately, it does happen. Unfortunately, those things happen, but we've never had a complaint of any significance that has ever been investigated." And because the goddess of irony is a good goddess, this whole thing boils up because Ron Rissler is a paralegal for the Rutherford Institute, which is another Christian legal hustle. So that's Andrew Economou. But here's where it gets a little weirder. Remember we were talking about the relationship between Greece and Russia, and Greece and Russia and the Trump campaign and George Papadopoulos, who, of course, was a nobody and a nothing and never heard of him except for all the time that he spent in the meeting advocating for back-channel secret meetings with the Russians United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, who wasn't Attorney General yet, but was just he was just the conductor on the Trump train, said that he pushed back against, except for the part of it where he thought it was a great idea. Well, Andrew Economou went out and got himself a lawyer in degree. And he was putting it to work when he was writing that nasty gram for Jay Sekulow. But then he had what he terms, and I presume it's afterward, what he terms a midlife crisis. And he stopped lawyering. And he went back to school and got himself a PhD. And this is pretty esoteric. Got himself a PhD in medieval history with a minor, I didn't know you could have a minor in a PhD, in church history from late antiquity through the high Middle Ages. He even went so far as to write a book on Byzantine Rome, Rome under the influence of the Byzantine Empire, and Greek popes. I'm doing my best to make this hang together. It's squirrely as hell, so bear with me. That book, in turn, takes a look at the viciousness of the internal power struggles within the church during the Dark Ages, and deals with things like the torment of Pope Martin, I'm not sure which Roman numeral. And in the meantime, when he returned to law practice, his firm, Economou, Atkinson, and Lambros, remember them, wrote the letter to the widow woman and her son, telling them to cease and desist, God damn it. Well, their particular little niche in the legal world is pursuing criminal and civil forfeiture proceedings against convenience store owners who are accused of running illegal video poker machines. Forfeiture of, you know, entire convenience stores and money made from the convenience store. And apparently Economou, Atkinson, and Lambros got very, very rich out of that scam. I'm sorry, that line of work. In point of fact, what it was is they were earning a percentage of the assets from every store that they busted. Because states that don't have legal gambling almost always have illegal gambling. Part of the motivation for having so-called video lottery in West Virginia was the fact that the state looked up. And oddly enough, we don't have the sense to make the same sort of determination with regard to cannabis, which is much less, and as in not at all, harmful. But the state looked up at all the so-called gray machines in this state and said, we are missing out on a shit ton of tax revenue. What in the hell is wrong with us? And legalized and so the state is just dotted with crummy little video game gambling hells. Why we don't see the wisdom and see that the thing is, once they legalized it and regulated it, the state of West Virginia gets 52% of 52 cents out of every dollar spent in a gambling den. And then 48 cents is divided either between the proprietor of the gambling den and the provider of the machines, or in the cases where the machines are just straight up owned by out-of-state corporate, they get the whole 48%. Otherwise, they split 48% 50-50 and wind up with 24% each. Sounds like a pretty good deal, doesn't it? Well, we can't seem to recognize the sanity of doing something like that with cannabis, but that's neither here nor there. This Economou guy was making bank going after little mom-and-pop convenience stores that had a gray machine in the back, which, of course, would draw customers in who would then buy, you know, a Red Bull or a Monster or a Coca-Cola. It's all Coke, of course. It's the South. Pack of cigarettes, bag of tater chips. Maybe a vaping whatchamathingy. It's all marketing. And they did so much of it that eventually the Georgia legislature back in 2012 actually passed a law that said those contingent fee agreements were illegal. Meanwhile, a guy named Bob Bauer, who was White House counsel under President Obama, told Vanity Fair regarding Mr. Economou, you wouldn't go to an ear, nose, and throat specialist to perform heart surgery. It's an odd notion that you just reach out and recruit lawyers you're personally comfortable with rather than select the people that have the experience and the training to address the very specific problem that you face. Interviewed by Reuters, Andrew Economou said, "I'll prosecute a lot of murders for the DA. That's basically it. Nothing earth-shaking. But I've been tested plenty of times. Just because you're not a beltway lawyer don't mean you don't know what you're doing." Economou, though, is described as having an abusive, abrasive personality. So that'll probably fit right in with the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. But interesting in all of that is the fact that he has the historical background on the long and complicated relationship between Greece and Russia, when you consider that people like Wilbur Ross were involved in banking schemes in Cyprus that were apparently money laundering operations for Russian oligarchs. Fascinating, isn't it? Meanwhile, a note coming in from, we'll call her Betty Buccaneer. Going back to what I mentioned about the Jeffrey Epstein connection and Trump and the 13-year-old little girl. The MSM ignored this article posted by the Daily Beast, posted on 10/14/16. It was written by Michael Gross. Gross is a journalist and author who wrote the book Model. Inside Donald Trump's one-stop parties, attendees recall cocaine and very young models. Yeah, that's another one of those that the for-profit media couldn't quite find its way to feature. Again, remember, it's the 14th of October, 2016, when it was published. The lead quote in Michael Gross's article, "I was there to party myself. It was guys with younger girls, sex, a lot of cocaine, top shelf liquor, but no smoking. Trump didn't approve of cigarettes." Oh, there's another one of those comparisons. You might want to go and look at it. It's at the Daily Beast. Trump, he reports, used to host parties in suites at the Plaza Hotel when he owned it, where young women and girls were introduced to older, richer men. Gross says this is hardly aberrant behavior in the modeling business. Indeed, it is standard operating procedure. But the people to whom Gross spoke put Donald Trump in the room with cocaine, very young women, and underage girls, and rich old men there to pardon my language, but if the Times can say pussy on its front page, I can say this, fuck them. Again, the author, the reporter, Michael Gross. Inside Donald Trump's one-stop parties, attendees recall cocaine and very young models. Yeah. By the way, I mentioned, I think it was last night, that Michael Avenatti, attorney for Stormy Daniels, had filed a notice of deposition or a motion to depose Marcus Aurelius. Well, a judge in Los Angeles, a federal judge, has denied that motion. And while the one's first inclination would be to say, damn it, he's going to get away with it, not so fast. Because there has still not been an answer filed to the complaint that Avenatti filed on behalf of Stormy Daniels. So the motion could easily have been dismissed or rejected on the basis of it not being appropriate at the time. So Avenatti says after the answer has been filed that he will refile. U.S. District Judge S. James Otero said, if such a petition were filed, namely a petition to kick it into arbitration, if such a petition were filed, a number of the questions raised in Daniel's motion may be answered in the petition, thus limiting the need for discovery on these issues. If such a petition is never filed, plaintiff's motion is moot. Accordingly, plaintiff's motion is premature and must be denied. In other words, the motion was not dismissed or denied on its merits. It was denied based upon its timing. So, yeah. I can't keep up, but Bill in Allentown tells me where the former chief of staff of the Trump White House and former chair of the RNC is concerned. His first name is pronounced with the long I sound, Reince, I guess. Reince! And his last name is pronounced with the long E sound, Priebus. Yeah, I got that. Yeah. Took German in high school, and that's what we were taught. The teacher did what he could to translate our names into German, as you can tell. Mine was easy, signed Wilhelm. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to look at Reince Priebus and not see Reince Penis. I mean, it, just because sometimes I have the... there's a little bit of me that's still a seventh grader and it can't be helped. So, you know, we've got I know that's a complicated story, but it's worth paying attention to and worth we'll see if Andrew Economou is the brilliant strategist that Jay Sekulow says he is. That sure was some brilliant strategery that he deployed in going after the widow's son now, wasn't it? Speaking of which, Reuters is reporting that, and I thought this was already something we knew, but apparently there's more of it. Robert Mueller has begun digging into an event that was held at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, in which both Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, who was not yet Confederate, I mean U.S. Attorney General, was just a humble senator from the state of Alabama, met with Sergei Kislyak. That would have been the, I suspect, if I recall correctly, that would have been the soiree that was funded by the Heritage Foundation. Russians everywhere. But in addition, Mueller's team, I guess that's the word, has begun inquiring into why the Republican Party platform changed lickety-split. In favor of Russia. An entire section of the Republican Party platform that had language that was downright unpleasant for Mother Russia got deleted wholesale from the Republican platform. It had to do with Ukraine. So, despite all the Trumpansy maggots, and despite all the precious little sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade riders, there is still something to the Trump-Russia investigation. And in fact, there's an argument to be made that it's not a matter of where there's smoke, there's fire. It's a matter of where there's fire. Among other things, Mueller's team is making inquiry into whether Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III had some private conversations with Sergei Kislyak. When Geezer Disgustus was giving a campaign speech at the Mayflower Hotel in April 2016. Spokescreeps for Sessions have repeatedly denied that there were any private discussions. But the problem is, Sessions has already been proven to be a, what's the word we're looking for here? Liar! Where all this is concerned, because he lied flat out, straight up, in his Senate confirmation hearings to be Attorney General of the United States of America. Interestinger and interestinger and interestinger. Yeah. 18 minutes past the hour. A reminder that it's always a case of do as I say and not as I do when it comes to Republicans and Trumpansies and the like, especially the goobs over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Remember that program that they created called Outnumbered? Yeah. Well, they had a lady from old Virginia on the program to talk about how there's nothing there, there's nothing to the whole Stormy Daniels thing, nothing to see here. Move along now. Forbes magazine covers you're looking for, right? In particular, we're talking about a correspondent for Fox News Business Channel named Dagan McDowell. Where do they find these people? And she said, well, fiddle-dee-dee, that whole Stormy Daniels thing, it don't mean a hill of beans to me. Wait till you hear the accent.
Throw up photographs of Stormy Daniels. Somebody from where I come from thinks one thing. I don't know how some pornography performer has anything to do with my well-being other than reminding me that those extra large chicken breasts at the market are expensive.
Oh my goodness.
Ho, 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 she done made a Stormy Daniels titty joke. Ho, ho, ho. Stay classy, Dagan. You know, everything is not about your well-being, sister. The Republic matters. The Constitution matters. And having a president who has apparently spent a lifetime trying to get him into a really, really blackmailable situation, that matters too. Hey, by the way, one of the gossip magazines, Us or In Touch or People or whatever, can't remember which, is reporting that poor Melanoma is just disgusted. And, of course, she didn't come back from Mar-a-Lago with the president. And she's staying down there. And her and little Baron are just having spring break there in Mar-a-Lago. That's what they're doing. And if she could, she'd just leave with him and go the hell away. And the question is, why doesn't she? And the answer is contained within the four corners of the prenuptial agreement, or perhaps the non-disclosure agreement. Did you know that everybody who went to work in the Trump White House was asked to sign a non-disclosure agreement? Did you know that that was not something anybody else had been doing before? No, really. Same sort of thing that Stormy Daniels was strong-armed into signing. Everybody else had to sign one, too. Because they knew going in that this was going to be a cesspit of a White House. All right, then. It just reminds me of how expensive those extra-large chicken breasts are. 130, really? Really, Dagan? Are those extra-large chicken breasts there at the market? Are they $130,000 for the pair? Is that how much they are, Dagan, darling? Yeah. Let's run over and check in with Jim. Hey, Jim.
All right, Brother Bob.
Duh.
Jim not here. My name be Flexi Jerikov, and you be talking about the Russian.
Gospodin Jerikov. Yeah.
You got these names going around in my little head, and I got the ache in the groin. I don't know what to do.
Wait, are you Russian or Italian?
My father's Russian. My mother Italian.
Makes perfect sense now.
And sometimes it's my personality. It's a split, you know?
Ah, see.
How are you, old fool?
Oh, you know, I'm just sitting here raw-dogging along at 23 minutes past the hour, Jim.
Now, you... Just a minute. You said it. I didn't...
Well, damn you for getting it started.
Now, you have a new name, and I call it... You are the Blessed Reverend. Now, you've always said the Uber this,
I'm the
Uber
Arch...
That.
Yeah, I've been the Arch-Pope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan... munificent Maharaja for a very long time now.
You are that as the Blessed Reverend. That's what you are. That's good.
I will haunt the mailbox so as to make sure that my certificate suitable for framing does not get wet.
You never saw that movie, The Loved One?
Oh yeah, and more than the movie, read the book.
Well, there you go. And the Blessed Reverend is well played by. Is it Jonathan Winters?
Yeah.
He plays several parts in that movie. It's just incredible. Let me ask you things. First thing. This lady, her name is really Quackenbush.
Oh, in Tennessee? Yeah, Kate Quackenbush.
God knows. Oh, I'm sure she had quite a time growing up.
But you've seen the Marx Brothers. You've heard the way Chico pronounces it. Hackenbush.
Unfortunately, I have.
Professor Hackenbush.
Well, there you go. But I want to tell you, I got new development. I am working from home now at what we call L Square Limited.
Really now?
Lot Lizard Limited. And I'm using my CDB radio. Now, I'm running the place, and my name is Big Honey, and I've got two associates named Bumblebee and Tippy Toe, and we run it through the CB, and they try to give relief and pleasure to these truckers on 77.
Breaker 19, come on back, Bumblebee.
That's it. You got it. Yep. Big Honey, that's my new handle. And you can...
You know, I halfway believe you've got a CB set up there. I wouldn't be surprised at all, Jim.
Why do you say this?
Big old base station, illegal signal boosters and everything, probably broadcasting halfway to Havana.
Well, you know, I could be pretty enterprising. I really can be. And
enterprising? you mean you'll pick them up?
Do what? I'm sorry.
I said enterprising. You mean you'll pick them up? Damn it, I'm giving myself a cowbell for that. That was quick.
You should. You should, absolutely. But this business about Trump and his cocaine parties, this is well known and was well known when I would go to New York City. People talk about it all the time.
Oh, I'm not. That was during his sexual Vietnam, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, exactly. But he was referred to by a lot of people I knew up there who were certainly were not prudes as a moral monster.
You're not going to have to work hard to convince me.
No, I mean, really. I mean, the guy, it's just, I don't know, it's just amazing. But yet these ultra-right religious people, they believe that in order to believe in God, you got to believe in Donald Trump.
Well, eventually it'll just be one of those imperial cults where it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, it's just amazing to see what we've got up there. And this business was the Veterans Affairs and that new... that doctor of his, Dr. Feelgood.
Well, that's a disgrace, Jim.
Well, of course it is. I mean, you know, anybody who can look at Donald Trump and tell you or tell me that he's 6'3" and weighs 239, I want him to come over here and put me into a size 4 dress from WWD, okay?
WWD?
Women's Wear Daily.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. It took me a minute. I thought maybe that was a new designer.
No.
And some size 6 pumps from Jimmy Choo, perhaps.
There you go. We got to keep Tippy Toe and Bumblebee well dressed. But I mean, it's just incredible how these people are.
Bumblebee, what's your 20?
Am I 20?
Yeah, I'm 10'8" with Tippy Toe.
You're giving yourself away. Speaking of being on the
road... Now, hold on a damn minute. I didn't give away shit.
You see, now I understand that you have a new addition to your fleet of vehicles.
Oh, you're talking about the Maybach?
Yeah, and that this is a 59 Cadillac with tail fins, and it's pink and... black, with a black top.
You got a satellite over the mansion here or something, Jim?
Well, Tippy told them we would get around towards your way, and they told me that they saw you in this car, and they loved your new vanity plates.
Well, I mean, you know, you got a car like a 59 Eldorado, by God, or is it a Fleetwood?
And they called me, and they told me that your plate said... OICU812, and yes. I thought that was so clever.
Well, it worked for Van Halen, so I figure, you know.
Oh Lord, I don't know. It's just a crazy night. It's a crazy world we're living in. It really is.
Well, no, you mentioned it, but I think it bears further consideration. You know, when you've got that caduceus on your uniform, whether you're Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, whatever, when you've got that caduceus on the uniform, it's a little bit different process through the ranks than, say, if you are, an infantry officer.
Of course it is.
And so, you know, Admiral Dr. Ronnie Jackson, it's not exactly like he's competent to go out and command a fleet upon the ocean seas. Wouldn't you agree?
No, that's not his career track.
Right, and he's also not competent to go and oversee the second largest bureaucracy in the United States government.
No, that's not his career track, no. He is a physician, but with him, those snakes in that caduceus have big rattle on the end of them.
Well, that or they're cobras.
Exactly. And he'll be approved, too.
Well, okay, let's talk about that for a minute. I mean, you apparently are taking the same position that I am, that for all of their big and braggadocious and, you know, bold words, that their spines will collapse like a house of cards when it comes down to confirmation time. Do I read you correctly?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering. I'm just who. I guess it would be the veteran. It would be the. Is there a Veterans Affairs Committee in the Senate?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So they'll have oversight. On the confirmation hearing, let's have a quick look here.
You see who's on that committee. I used to know, but I don't anymore.
Okay, let's have a quick peep. United States Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs. So they will have the they'll have the jurisdiction. You're right. This is not this is not promising. The majority is comprised, Jim, of Chairman Johnny Isaacson of Georgia. He is, of course, a maggot. Jerry Moran of Kansas. John Boozman of Arkansas. Dean Heller of Nevada, who is anxious to get his happy ass reelected.
True.
Bill Cassidy of Louisiana Stan. Mike Rounds of South Dakota, Thom Tillis of North Carolina, and Dan Sullivan of Alaska.
Well, there you go.
So
he'll sail right through.
So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 Republicans to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 8. It's 8-7. In that committee. The ranking Democrat is John Teaster of Montana, Patty Murray of Washington, Bernie, Sherrod Brown of Ohio, Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, Mazie Hirono of Hawaii, and man of silly putty, Joe Manchin of West Virginia.
Well, there you go. I knew he was on it. But I didn't... I just couldn't process the membership list that quickly. Yeah, I figured Big Joe was on it. So you know it's going to go through. And this man is going to be, or has been, the physician who will verify that Trump is all hale and hearty and is ready to hit the Olympic training ground. And now he's going to be in charge of Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, what's this fool going to do with all this privatization stuff that they're running through their heads about?
Well, he is there specifically for the purpose of gutting the VA.
Well, that's just not going to work.
For instance,
I mean, that agency is in as bad a shape as it's. Well, it's better, but it's certainly far from what it could be and should be. And when you start, you know, doing that, well, good luck.
Yeah. No, I think we can look for some principled opposition, maybe from Bernie, Sherrod Brown, Richard Blumenthal's no pushover. Joe will find any camera that's pointed vaguely in his direction and leap in front of it and hoot and holler about how we got to find balance. But this is still the second Trumpiest place on earth, and he's got a primary to deal with in about 1 month and 10 days.
Well, I'll tell you something right there. It really should. You know, again, I'm repeating myself, I know, but I just cannot understand how and why the members of his base are so besotted upon this man.
Who, Manchin?
Upon Trump.
Oh, Trump, I'm sorry. What, he provides confirmation bias to their most bigoted, racist, xenophobic, homophobic, fascist impulses. That's why they're besotted, Jim. It ain't rocket science.
Well, I know that, but I thought people at least would be good to see from some of the tricks he's pulled and the stunts he pulled that this guy is not fit to be in the office in which he was elected. Not really selected.
Well, I generally agree. I don't know how much you get around over there where you are, but I got a question for you. Are you seeing much in the way of political yard signs yet?
No, not a lot.
Because I've started paying attention, and I'm not seeing diddly over here. Not a Manchin's, you know, Manchin's opponent doesn't have enough money to buy any yard signs. But there's no Manchin signs out. But what I find particularly interesting, and maybe they'll sprout like mushrooms after a warm spring rain here in a couple of weeks, given the ferocity of the primary between Blankenship and Evan Jenkins and Patrick Morrissey, I don't see any of their signs anywhere.
Well, it's a while until the campaign really starts.
It's not. The primary's May 8th, Jim.
Well, I guess you're right there.
One month and 10 days.
Well, they've got the merry months of April to do what they got to do. And I don't know if people are really doing that stuff anymore with yard signs.
Oh, they were all over the place in the last election cycle.
I was out of position then. I didn't even see anything. But my God.
Well, but when it comes to the confirmation of Dr. Ronnie Jackson, just to sort of turn the conversation back in that direction for a moment, I don't know what to think, because the ranking member, in other words, the guy who will sit at the center of the dais next to the chairman, John Teaster, Montana, he's got an election fight on his hands in November, and he comes from a maggot state. You got to wonder how much pushback he can afford to muster where this guy's concerned. He was good enough to take care of Barack Obama. Jackson was. And that's part of why he continues to take care. That's why they made such a big deal out of it, out of the bullshit physical that he did for Trump, because it made it seem like he was just an unbiased physician clinician.
Well, my God, Bob, Barack Obama would be a physician's dream.
Well, yeah, he walks in. How you feeling, Barack? Feel pretty good. Okay.
I mean, just look at the man. And, you know, Barack Obama is just a picture of health. I mean, well, under any type of weight problem, I mean, there's nothing wrong with him. The guy's as healthy as a horse.
Especially after Michelle made him quit smoking.
Exactly. And you know, that was one of her big things, was you know, in vegetables and stuff like that. I'm reading this thing on Facebook with her picture, and it asked if I would vote for her, and I put hell yes. If that woman ran for president, I would vote for her in a heartbeat.
I don't think she has any interest in it whatsoever, but...
Well, she'd be a fool, too, but if she were to do that, if she were, I would certainly have not had any problem voting for her. I certainly would not. Because, I mean, when you look at what we had with Barack and Michelle, that's what we have now, it's just white trash with a little money.
Well,
that's all there is to it.
Burrow billies,
billies. And they will confirm him.
To go back to that for just a minute, then, you know, the dynamic in the Senate is such that Mike Pencilneck Geek will have to be on standby to cast the deciding vote in case there's a 50-50. But
yeah, of course.
I mean, have we? I guess I'm sitting here just stuttering like I don't broadcast, but. If you take into account the John McCain's and the occasional criticisms of Lindsey Graham and the bold pronouncements of Jeff Flake and Bob Corker and the like, at some point isn't there a Rubicon anywhere to be found?
I can't find one. And I'm not real good at searching for one, to tell you the truth, because the politics up there have become so degraded and so messed up that there's no way that I can speak even intelligently about what's going on with these people. I mean, have you heard anything about McCain? He's been mighty quiet lately. Of course, the man's sick. I know he's trying to save his life. And Brother Lindsey, I guess he's probably... well in Scots of the veranda at Peckerwood or his other home that you've named.
Oh, the ancestral plantation of Smoking Chode? Smoldering
but
Chode.
But that's pretty as Peckerwood, okay? Believe you me,
right.
That's his real name. Okay. But I haven't heard anything from him, and usually he's pretty vocal about some of this stuff. I haven't heard any words from him in months.
The last I heard of him was some talk in regard to, in regard to his response to the nomination of, I think Mike Pompeo to be Secretary of State.
Well, Lizzie, maybe he's still busy with that pack of his called Funding American Government. Who knows?
I do know the latest news out of John McCain is that he has a memoir coming out in which he promises to offer a no-holds-barred assessment of the state of government in D.C. But Haspel was an advocate of torture, and Pompeo is a 200-proof war hawk. The last I heard of McCain was that he had grave misgivings about one or the other or both nominations. I would think, though, given the positions that he has taken about the well-being of veterans, he would be one to be heard from, but of course we just went over the Republicans on that committee, and none of them are John McCain.
No. Well, if McCain should finally get that book in print, I should like to read it. Of course, I don't know, to tell you the truth, it's gotten with me to the point that I'm just so tired of these machinations and the products that are produced by what's going on up there in Washington that, I don't know, it's just beyond the pale. And, you know, I don't think that there is any place in the world, probably, that right now is unhappy is America. I think we are the unhappiest nation in the world. I really do. It just seems like that has a pall has settled upon this country.
You know, that's an interesting point, Jim. I don't know if I'd say unhappy as don't know how to be happy.
Well,
I mean, we've got all the accoutrements that should facilitate happiness, but we find ourselves not happy. And for my own part, I'm working on that. I've made a commitment to, you know, when the decent weather comes, I'm gonna get out and hike these trails around here, because I love doing that sort of thing, and I think it'll just clear my head a little bit. I'd love to go and hike around Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante before they blow it all to hell, but I got a national park within 5 miles of me, and I damn well ought to be taking advantage of it.
Well, I think that's a good idea. I really do. Be thankful you're physically capable of doing it.
Well, we shall
find out. Absolutely.
But a lot of the trails are fairly flat, so I should be able to manage it.
Well, you know, they design those things with a combination for people. They're not meant for, you know, these people are, you see in the newspaper or TV who are doing all these incredible things.
Yeah, I'm not summiting Everest or anything. You know, many years ago, it was on the bucket list to summit Kilimanjaro, but you know, I don't think I may just have to cross that one off.
Well, we all have noble ambitions.
I'm still not giving up on winning the lottery and buying my sailboat and crossing the Atlantic or something. But
well, if I were you, I would go down to the Zippy, whatever you go down to, and get one of those Mega Millions tickets, because it's $500 million.
Is it really?
Uh-huh.
I may have to get me one of them tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll get you one of the retirement tickets, my friend. I mean, why not? I've got one sitting right above my head.
That'd probably buy me some sailing lessons.
God, believe it would. I mean, I wonder how much, I know this is a departure from what we were talking about. If you were to win, say, how could one person win $500 million? Wouldn't that be kind of split up by some other people who might have similar numbers?
No, there's no similar. It's the exact numbers or forget it.
Okay. So now how much of that would they let you keep?
Basically, you take whatever the number is and you subtract a third.
And you get to keep a third?
No, you get to keep two-thirds.
Oh, yeah, two-thirds, right.
If you take the cash award, that number is based upon a long-term payout, but if you take the cash award, they reduce it to present value. So it's less again than what it appears to be.
Well, if you're older, you take it all at once and thank you. And if you're younger and have lots of hope, then you can take it that way. But you can't, for example, when you go, those payments stop, correct?
That I don't know. What you want to be, you know, there's the stories are legion of people winning those things and just having their lives ruined. The trick is knowing how to deal with it. So, for instance,
every time it gets to this level, he buys about $200 worth of tickets.
Who does?
Some guy around here. I don't know what his name is. Joe Bryce was telling me about him. I'd have to ask Joe again. I talked to him this afternoon, and he said, I asked him about it, and he said that some guy, whenever it gets into this elevation, buys about between $150 and $200 worth of tickets, and the guy had also given this advice out to people publicly, because this guy had won before about 15 years ago.
Well, what happens is that the whatever that number is a number if it's stretched out over years. If you pay your taxes and you take the two-thirds that's left over, they reduce the two-thirds to present value, and that's the lump sum that you receive.
Hmm.
So it's not just that number times 0.66. It's that number times 0.66 and then reduced to present value.
Which would be?
I don't know. That's what the
how's that calculated, I wonder?
Those are future dollars, so they are reduced to what the dollars are worth today.
Huh. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Of course, I've never
The same thing can happen. Say in a jury verdict with a massive amount of money, they'll reduce it to present value.
Yeah, I wonder how they handle that too, because I mean, some of the awards that are given are just incredible.
But the trick is what you do with the ticket before you go down there and turn it in. If you sign that sucker, you're stuck with it as it is. For anybody who ever gets one of these things, the first thing you do, you do not sign the back of the ticket. You wait in horrifying paranoia until your lawyer's office opens the next morning. You go to the lawyer's office. The lawyer sets up a trust, and then the trust administrator signs the ticket, and then you remain anonymous.
Oh, yeah. Could you imagine people knowing around you that you've gotten that much money?
Well, see, the problem is some of the states that participate in the multi-state lottery have mandatory requirements to give someone's that their name be published. And the only way you can get around that is by setting up the trust. Other states, I think Florida and South Carolina are examples of it, allow you to choose to remain anonymous. Last I checked, West Virginia is a mandatory disclosure state.
Oh, boy.
But behind all of this is, and they've done everything in their power to try to keep it out of the news, that multi-state lottery was rocked by a scandal that took it all the way to its core a couple of years ago, and the reverberations are still out there, from their chief of security who rigged the games.
I remember something about that now.
And one of the ones he rigged was Hot Lotto, and Hot Lotto got pulled. And so there's a different
yep.
there's a different game called Lotto America running now that went into that replaced Hot Lotto. And here's the trick to that. Any lottery game where the numbers are pulled by a random number generator in a computer is subject to abuse, because every random number generator operates from a kernel.
All right.
And so it isn't truly random and can be manipulated. The only ones that can't be manipulated theoretically are the ones that are based on, you know, ping pong balls blowing into a chute.
Right. Well, I believe that's how they ascertain the winner of Powerball, and also
I'm not sure if Mega Millions is ping pong balls, but Powerball is.
I know Powerball is, but I'm not sure about Mega Millions. But I know that a lot of people are talking about that $500 million thing. My God. You know, what would you do with all that money?
Are you kidding? I've got a list.
I know what you're saying.
It's a crazy list. It's a list that's like provides solar panels for every house in this little community I live in. And fully funding the 8 campaign so we can really push back against the people who are killing us.
Of course, that would be right there.
But yes, my sail. But somewhere down there is my sailboat.
Well.
And my sailing and my sailing lessons.
Well, you're gonna need those too, because you don't want to get out there and get in trouble. So, when do you hit the rippy mark?
Now that you've told me about it, I guess I'll go down there tomorrow and buy one.
Okay.
You know,
well,
I should have kept
my mouth shut.
No, it's like the old joke about the guy who prayed every night God, let me win the lottery. God, let me win the lottery. And finally, this big booming voice comes out of the sky and says, meet me halfway. Buy a damn ticket.
Really? That's right. It cannot pay if you do not play. And, you know, with some people, they have a little bit of, I guess, renewed hope right before they announce the winner.
Well, no, what you're paying for in that $1 ticket, Jim, is the right to fantasize. You can't dream about winning a lottery that you don't have a ticket for. But for a few minutes with that little ticket in your hand, you can start imagining things like putting solar panels on every house in this community and a string of wind turbines across the ridge and just, you know, sticking a dagger in the heart of the coal-fired electricity in this state.
Well, that's a noble ambition, certainly is. I wish mine were such, but I don't know. It would be incredible, but like you said before, a lot of these people who won these things have really, it's backfired.
Because they were, they got hit by what a buddy of mine used to call the yippee factor, and they just went wild, fulfilling every fantasy they ever had.
Well, that kind of behavior can be really destructive.
Well, you remember Jack Whitaker, right?
Yeah.
You know, got himself knocked over in the. And claimed to have been robbed of a briefcase full of cash in the parking lot of the Pink Pony Strip Club down in Cross Lanes.
I remember that now.
But then it just got sadder and sadder because he's like, well, here, honey child, let me give you a hot little car. And gives his granddaughter a hot car and all the money she ever wanted. And a year or so later, they found where her boyfriend had stuffed her body in a wood pile after she'd OD'd.
Yeah, it seems as though bad luck pursued that man. Now, he's the one, I believe, that Joe may have been talking about. Because he was the one. I actually think he won that thing twice, didn't he?
No, he won it once. And he was already a millionaire when he won it. And, you know, some of it was karma catching up with him because he was a deadbeat who stiffed his workers and didn't fudged on. He was a contractor and, you know, earth moving and stuff like that, and he
lumberyard contractor.
He got
like
him.
Say,
he was in. He was in trouble with workers' comp, and he was in trouble with the state, and he was in trouble with it, yeah, and the Department of Labor and everything. And he was, and you know, a couple of years later, there were stories in the newspaper about the kneecap boys from Vegas and Atlantic City wondering where he was.
Oh dear! I wonder how he got mixed up with them.
Well, because if you've got a few hundreds of millions of dollars, they'll extend your credit there at the casino. And the next thing you know, your money's gone and you still got a tab. Hey, Jim, I got to get out of here, my friend. It's been an interesting conversation. You have a good night.
Well, you too. You take care. And be sure to get those vanity plates all now.
I absolutely will. I polish them every evening. You take care, Jim.
All right.
Bye now.
Good night.
It's a buddy, Jim, calling from not too far from here. Hey, thanks. That's mighty nice. I wish I could do it. Speed in Phoenix says, come on to Hood River, Oregon this summer. I'll teach you to sail. Oh, that would be fun. That would be mighty fun. Got to win the lottery first. Oh, well. Thanks, everybody, for joining in this evening. Thanks for sharing your precious finite time engaging in this little conversation in whatever means by which you so do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Well, it's a lifeline to the outside world, especially with John out there trying to rebuild headonradionetwork.com. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Remember, Friday on the front porch tomorrow. Later.